This WBEZ podcast is supported by The Auditorium, presenting Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, April 24th through the 26th. Experience the power, passion, and athleticism under the direction of newly appointed artistic director, Alicia Graf Mack. Plus, five Chicago premieres showcasing the bold innovation and artistry that have made Alvin a global cultural treasure. Tickets at auditoriumtheater.org.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. So are you a dog person or a cat person? It is and always has been the dogs for me. But most of my coworkers are feline lovers, and between them and the hilarious cat memes and Tony Baker voiceovers I consume on social media, I shudder to say that cats might be growing on me. Emphasis on might. Besides dogs, another one of my first loves as a kid was drawing. I'll tell you about my past life as a visual artist another day, but that's really what got me into this new book by Lucy Nisley. She's an illustrator based in Evanston, and her most recent book is called Whoa, A House Cat's Story of Despair. It's a graphic novel about her loud cat, Lenny, who is very extra. Extra emotional, extra high maintenance, extra regal.
Can you walk me through drawing Lenny?
Yes. Okay, so Lenny was a long-haired cat. The nice thing about long-haired cats is that you can't see any of their physicality. They just sort of exist as like a blob, an amorphous blob, which is particularly easy for most people to draw. She had typically eyes that were pretty wall-eyed, like pointed slightly in opposite directions, which really gave her a particular air of majesty.
Lucy took all that personality and amorphous blobbiness and made a book that had me laughing out loud while I was reading it on the CTA. Lucy's work is extremely resonant. She created a comic strip about Lenny's death that has struck a chord with thousands of people. It's featured in this book, Whoa, but she says it also makes the rounds on the internet whenever somebody loses a pet. Lucy is on a book tour right now, so today she's going to tell us about the comic and why she decided to give her cat, Lenny, the voice of a British nun, and why she fell in love with comics. Lucy, welcome to The Rundown.
Thank you so much.
This book was so fun. We're going to talk about the book later, but first I want to get into your childhood a little bit. I know you grew up on the East Coast in New York reading comics.
Yep.
What were some of your favorites as a kid?
In the 90s, it wasn't exactly the most diverse pool available at most newsstands, which is the only place you could kind of find comics when I was growing up.
Okay.
So I read a lot of Archie comics. I read a lot of Mad Magazine, and I read a ton of Calvin and Hobbes. And I think Calvin and Hobbes was the real sort of origin story to me becoming a comic artist.
Okay, tell me about Calvin and Hobbes. I don't know if I know that one.
Oh, Calvin and Hobbes. It was a newspaper strip. It ran for a little over a decade. Bill Watterson is the author and artist of it, and he made this perfect comic strip about a little boy and his stuffed tiger who would become animate when no one else was around, and they would have these sort of philosophical conversations about life and celebrated kind of the frustrations and the magic of childhood while still being very realistic. So it was this perfect comic strip, and then Bill Watterson did this wonderful thing and then just stopped making comics and like went and was a recluse. He's like the dream. He lived the dream. He like made a perfect thing and then was like, I'm done. Goodbye. So I grew up reading this. It was like the perfect time in my life. I was like the perfect age. It was the same age as Calvin.
Oh, yeah.
And this idea of being able to draw this thing that is so internal, this conversation you have in your imagination was such a light bulb moment for me because I could be like, oh, these things that I think about that I forget tomorrow, I could draw and write them out and then have that as a record.
Yes. And so your parents, though, were not like very much into your comic loving, right?
Not so much. My dad is an English professor. He's actually a dean now, but he thought that comics were pretty lowbrow, like not very literary. And my mother
is comics not literary?
Right, not like bam, pow, nachos for kids anymore. But yeah, my dad was like, these are not. He grew up in kind of the golden age of superhero comics, so he was looking at that from that perspective. Uh-huh. And my mother is this pretty hardcore feminist who was looking at all this stuff coming out in the 90s that was very sort of questionable in terms of the representation of women, of people of color. And she was saying, this is not what I want my daughter to be growing up reading. Mm. But I had to then seek out the comics that went against these stereotypes that my parents had to try and find these things that had literary merit or had sort of a feminist subtext to it to try and get my parents to continue to buy me these comics, which is great. It helped me to kind of learn how to critically read these things at an early age and get me thinking about it from an early age.
Wow. Okay. So you had, on the one hand, like, oh, okay, I'm having these thoughts as a kid and I want to express them and remember them and process them. On the other hand, I need to also be inspired by this like very forward and progressive media.
Right. Or I need to get more of them. So I need my parents to think that I'm being inspired by
Got you. Tell me about deciding that you wanted to be the one to make these comics as a job, like as a thing that you do.
When I was growing up, comics were so magical to me that they were completely separate from some person that made them. They sort of just existed in the world for me.
Oh.
So I didn't put it together that that was something I could do for a really long time. I thought that I would have to choose between being a writer or being an artist. And I thought those were two like realistic jobs that some people have in this world. And I had a terrible time in high school. I undiagnosed ADHD and like just miserable time in high school. I wound up at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago here, who have one of the best writing programs of any fine art school in the country. And it was not until college when I was like, I guess I'm going to be a painter? that I started taking these comics out of my sketchbook, sort of this hobby, this passion of mine that didn't have any bearing on my career. And I started to publish them in the school newspaper, F News Magazine. And it was sort of my way of breaking out of this shyness that I had as a freshman. I wasn't in a position to meet other comic artists in class, but they would see my work published in the newspaper and reach out to me. So this is how I met Hope Larson, who's another graphic novelist. She was a senior when I was a freshman there, and she reached out and said, hey, you're another girl making comics. We should hang out. And she kind of took me under her wing. She started taking me to like indie comics fests. And
oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
It was introduced.
I'm sure your mom loved that as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That's
lovely.
It was
perfect. And it was great. It was how I started to meet people that actually did this for a living. And
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So you ended up going to the Center for Cartoon Studies.
I did.
In Vermont. I'm sure art school can be very serious, but like it's giving goofy, it's giving puppet school, improv studies.
Whatever you're like picturing, it's like more weird.
Okay, yes. Tell me about cartoon school.
The Center for Cartoon Studies is this little program that was started in kind of a derelict town in Vermont. And I was suddenly going from vibrant Chicago, where I had been for the last 4 years and art in like immersed in the arts community of SAIC, to like here you are in the woods. The only businesses are like a VFW hall. And cartoonists are not naturally very gregarious. We're not like people that are super duper comfortable in social situations. So it's a whole school of people like that who are kind of socially maladjusted.
Okay. So in the woods.
Yeah, in the woods. No other people around. And it is like, it's an amazing program.
Yeah, yeah.
Super, super cool place. But yeah, 1 year was good okay. for me. And then yeah. I did my thesis year remotely.
So, and at some point you're playing string instrument
yeah.
as well. Did you learn that as a kid or is that something that came about later?
I learned the guitar and the drums as a kid. So I had
okay.
kind of a foundation. And then I taught myself, among other things, that year that I was in the woods, I taught myself the ukulele and started making ukulele songs. I also taught myself how to heely at the time.
Which is?
You know those shoes that kids have that they're all breaking their heads open on with had the wheel in the back heel of them?
Yes.
While I was in grad school, there were all the lawsuits about the heelys where people started banning them and like shoe stores wouldn't carry them anymore. So you could get them really cheap. And I was like, well, I'm here in the woods. I have all this weird free time on my hands. I'm going to teach myself how to do this weird thing. So yeah, that was one of the weird skills I picked
wow.
up.
Wow. Okay. That is, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. That was a weird one.
let's talk about, well, a house cat's story of despair.
Great.
Thank you for this hilarious book.
Thank you.
Introduce me to Linny. Tell me, what was she like?
Okay. Linny was a 4-year-old. I say that with a question mark because the shelter couldn't really tell. Mm-hmm. Rescue cat we got at the Paws Cat Rescue. Mm-hmm. My then boyfriend at the time and I had just moved in together, and I had slowly broken him down about getting a cat. And we walked in and picked up this sort of pile of apricot-colored fur, and she immediately began, like, licking my hand. And I was like, oh, she likes me. She loves me. She's giving me kisses. This is the cat. We have to get this one. So we took this cat home. It turned out she had, like, everything wrong with her. She was, like, missing teeth. She had other teeth that need to be pulled. She had ringworm and ear infection, like, all kinds of medical problems that then became our problems. And of course, we, like, were willing to break the bank on our new baby. And so this was a high-maintenance cat from the beginning. But anyway, every cat you get, it's going to be this weird, eccentric animal that lives in your house, and you know all these weird things about them. But Linny got a little older. She would have these just despairing, mournful meows about everything in her life. You know, she could have a full bowl of food. She could be having all the attention that she needs. Everything in her life is going great. But she still had these vocalizations that made it sound like she was just in utter despair.
Hence the title.
Whoa. So I began to translate these meows into English words in my sketchbook.
How does Linny become, like, a British woman from the 19th century,
yes,
who is royalty, obviously.
Yes, obviously. So Linny's voice is actually based off this character from Call the Midwife, who is an elderly nun who works as a midwife. Her name is Sister Monica Joan. She's like 1,000 years old in the show. She's wonderful.
Oh, my God.
And
okay.
It's a BBC show.
Okay.
I just thought that Linny's voice would be very similar to it because she was this little old lady and she was complaining about stuff that was just so silly to complain about, but she was so eloquent about it. So I wanted to give her this kind of eloquent, stately manner.
Yes.
So her voice is partially based on Sister Monica Joan.
Perhaps you offer the Eucharist as a viaticum for my final journey to the beyond.
I merely meant, given your current situation.
Despite my situation, I can assure you I do not yet require the last rites. I may be verging on decrepitude, but I am not yet dead.
Okay, Sister Monica Joan, this is the voice that we're reading. The scenes that you put out about Linny describe so much of why I feel very much like I don't understand cats at all. I, you know, full disclosure, I am a dog person.
Gotcha.
I am a dog, basically, is what I say. Cats can be aggressively ambivalent,
you know.
But you've been a cat person for a long time. Tell me about the first cat that you really loved.
My first cat was an all-black little cat with gold eyes that used to escape in our country house and climb the tallest tree that he could find and stay there until I, weeping as a small child in the dark of night, in the pouring rain, scale a 40-foot tree to fetch this cat down. So this was my, like, my
tactical training.
My first love. My tactical training and first love. My origin story as a cat person. Immediately, this relationship was set up that I was there to serve this animal and do their bidding, and they were there to just grace me with their presence.
What I must ask about that felt interesting and,
this
attractive
is where
to you.
The toxoplasmosis really comes in, this thing that we all cat people have, this fungus in our brains that's turning us insane and loving cats. And That's the magic of it.
Linny did pass away
a few
years ago. Mm-hmm. And you have a storyline of kind of that process that I know became very popular.
Yes.
A few times.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's, for me, it was the way that you tell it where you are having a very different experience than what Lenny is having. Not just because you're living and Lenny is dying, but because you are having these emotions.
Right.
And your family and Lenny's loved ones are having these emotions, and Lenny is still Lenny.
Yes.
And
it's sort of this flip, because throughout the book she's being very dramatic and sad about things that aren't dramatic and sad to me.
Ah.
And then there's this flip at the end where when she's really elderly and sick and it's sort of the end of her time, as an animal, she sort of recognized that and was pretty at peace with it. And me, I was like unable to deal.
Yes.
So that became this really dramatic, sad thing for me. And she was like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. It is a really lovely juxtaposition. Do you feel like you came out of that thinking about death differently or life?
I don't know. At the time, I think when you go through a pet's passing, it just destroys you for such a period of time that, you know, for me, I was like, I'm never having another animal in my life. Yeah. Like, I can never love again. And, you know, with some distance from it, I can be like, well, you know, like, Lenny really handled that so well. And she brought so much to our lives. And you forget. It's like these people that have more than one kid that they, like, forget the horrors of having a kid the first time. And they're like, let's do it all again. So yeah. I've now gained enough distance that I'm like, yeah, you know, cats are really, like, I can love again. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So I think that it is good to kind of practice that mortality. I don't like when people say that, like, pets are good practice for when your loved one dies, but it's true to like deal with that confrontation of death and mortality, and to especially to do it with an animal when you're the one having to make the call, where you're like, okay, this animal is in pain and I don't want them to suffer, and I have to figure out where this line is, where, like, are they not living a good life anymore? I did make this comic that it took me a while to process her passing, and sort of I knew that I had this kind of responsibility, because there were a lot of people online who liked my sketchbook comics about this cat, to sort of break the bad news. And so it took me a while to work through that and to turn it into a comic. And I'm proud of the piece that I made. It's very sort of kind and thoughtful without being overtly like the rainbow bridge, like thing that I'm not crazy about, that kind of stuff. But this comic is something that I'm very proud of, but it does deal with this very sad time in my life. And now at least once a day, I get someone online who tells their own story about their animal's passing, their very beloved animal passing, and sort of reposts this comic. And so every day I get new information about, like, oh, this person's cat just died. This person's dog just died.
Yeah.
So it is this sad thing that I'm like, I get this reminder of it almost every day. But it's lovely to know that I'm offering some comfort to people going through that.
Yeah, absolutely. Lucy Nisley is the author of Woe, A House Cat's Story of Despair. Lucy, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Erin.
And Lucy is on a book signing tour. You can find her at Challengers Comics in Chicago on July 2nd. You can also find her at the Evanston Public Library on August 4th. And that's it for today. Justin Bull, Sarah Stark, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve is our editor and executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you on Wednesday.